About 1 in 7 boys in the United States will be diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or known as ADHD, and millions will use prescription medications to deal with that diagnosis.
There's been growing concern over the years that too many boys are taking those medications and that our society is pathologizing boyhood and putting kids at risk of side effects.
Ryan D'Agostino joins us now. He's articles editor for Esquire. His piece, The Drugging of the American Boy, is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You start your piece by describing some of the unintentional and unfortunate side effects that ADHD medications can cause to the young boys who take them. Could you tell us what those are?
Yeah, they're scary, and some of them are rare and some of them are common. The common ones might include weight loss, trouble sleeping, headaches, but some of the more rare but existent side effects include more sort of psychotic symptoms, hearing voices, believing things that are not true. There have been reports of kids having paranoid feelings that there's bugs crawling on them. They develop facial tics, and these are, I think, not because of the prevalence of the diagnosis of the disorder and of the number of prescriptions that are being written, I thought that these were things that a lot of people probably didn't realize.
And that's your question. You wonder, with side effects like these, within unknowns such as what do these drugs do to the adolescent brain, you're wondering, why are so many boys on them? How many boys are taking drugs like these? And girls, but it's a majority of boys. But what are the numbers?
Well, so boys are more than twice as likely to be diagnosed as girls, diagnosed with ADHD, 15.1 to less percent to less than 7%. So we're talking a total of about 6.4 million American children between the ages of 4 and 17. And two-thirds of those children currently are taking some sort of medication. Many more have taken it and stopped.
And these numbers seem to be steadily rising with each passing year.
That's what was the impetus for this whole thing. It's like, what? That's the question I went in with. What's going on? Because until about 1997, the rates for ADHD seemed to be pretty steady, around 3% of kids, and people seem to think that was sort of, you know, made sense. And then starting in that year, the numbers began to increase 3% a year, and then a few years later they were increasing 5.5% a year, and then by 2013 we had 11% of school children with this disorder, and everyone on all sides of this sort of seemed to be very alarmed. So I went in with that question of, you know, what's going on. What I came out with was an understanding first of all, there's lots of explanations for why this might be happening. Everything from, well, starting in 1997, the pharmaceutical companies were allowed by the FDA to start marketing these drugs more directly to consumers. So, well, okay, that's interesting. But then people have all kinds of other explanations, everything from diet to video games, and they have varying levels of credence. But what I started hearing over and over again was, well, and of course, when the numbers get this high this quickly, you have a lot of misdiagnosis. And that just was staggering to me, because a misdiagnosis with any kind of psychiatric disorder, you know, it happens. But when you're talking about kids who are 5, 6, 7 years old, and a misdiagnosis might mean that they're put on a drug with such severe and serious and scary side effects, it really shocked me and scared me.
Why is it that it's boys in particular who tend to be the ones who are prescribed ADHD medications at such high rates compared to girls?
Well, I think if you just look at the symptoms of the disorder, it's things like, you know, not being able to sit still and needing to run around and impulsivity and not being able to focus and concentrate and sit there at your desk for 3 hours in a row reading a book very quietly. And, you know, as a former boy, you know, I sort of, you know, any boy can sort of identify with, you know, we all had trouble sitting, you know, not being able to sit in school. And so I think people do sort of ascribe it to the general tendency, but very real tendency, for boys to be more active. Interestingly, a lot of people think girls are underdiagnosed with ADHD because they don't show these symptoms of, you know, hyperactivity or running around. But again and again, I heard, well, but okay, we need to be a little more careful, because boys, if they're going to have these tendencies, and if they sort of everyone, you know, agrees that they do have more energy, and again, we're talking in such generalities, but in truth also, you know, we need to wait a little bit, be more patient, and make sure that this is not just boyhood. The most staggering study that I came across in my reporting was a study that was done in Canada. It was published in 2012, and they studied 1 million school children, which is like by far the, you know, the biggest study of its kind. And in Canada, the cutoff for starting a certain whatever grade of school you're in is December 31st. That's nationwide. So the kids in with December birthdays tend to be the youngest kids in the class. The kids in with January birthdays tend to be the oldest kids in the class. Well, if you're born in December, you have a 30% higher chance of being diagnosed with ADHD than kids born in January, and boys were 41% more likely to be given some kind of prescription for ADHD to medication if they were born in December versus January.
So does that suggest to you that these boys just haven't had a chance to develop, like the ones who were born in January?
Precisely. Yeah.
Is there another strand of this, too, the atmosphere of schools? Is there the extra pressure point put on here that parents want their kids to perform well in school, starting at a young age, so that they can be competitive later on, and also that schools want boys to perform well on tests, to sit still and to focus in and perform?
Certainly. You know, you have a lot of parents who have heard that these drugs work. And by the way, they do work. And they're not evil, and I tried to take great pains to say that, you know, if your child is diagnosed with ADHD by a very good doctor who takes the time to make the diagnosis, it's a pretty involved process. It can't be done in 10 minutes. Unfortunately, that's the problem. So many of them are done in 10 minutes. But if you're comfortable with the diagnosis and the medication is prescribed and it works, yeah, that's fine. The problem is the misdiagnosis, and so yes, well, you start seeing parents who want the kids to be on the drugs because they do work, and maybe the test scores do go up. Although that is, you know, widely debated about, you know, whether these drugs actually improve test scores. But yeah, with things like No Child Left Behind, and any educational law that hinges so much on test scores, which increasingly they do. You start to see this tendency to, you know, some scientists have argued that the federal government is inadvertently incentivizing diagnoses of ADHD because often kids who have a diagnosis and a prescription, they get to take tests, they get more time, or sometimes their test scores don't even have to be counted in the overall average. So the more kids you have who have ADHD, the higher the overall scores for your district can be.
And what about doctors as far as they go? Are there incentives for doctors that you saw to prescribe ADHD medications?
Well, not so much incentives. Well, I guess there are, the cynicism is that, well, doctors are being urged by pharmaceutical companies to make more diagnoses, and that has to do with the sort of Bible of psychiatry, which is the DSM, which is this you know, giant book that comes out every bunch of years that doctors use to figure out, you know, to make diagnoses. And the definition of ADHD in that book sort of keeps getting broader, and the age limits in which a child can be diagnosed keep getting wider, adding millions of kids to sort of the pool that can officially be given this diagnosis. But the other issue that doctors are facing is not that they're bad people who want to put kids on drugs, but that they are just completely sort of crushed by the pressures of working within our mental health system and our you know, general health system, where the average pediatrician visit is less than 10 minutes. And as everyone has been in a waiting room at a doctor's office, you know, you can attest to that. Many doctors have stopped taking insurance because insurance doesn't reimburse doctors for putting in the time it takes to make a proper diagnosis, interviewing teachers, multiple interviews with the parents and the child, extensive observation over the course of like a couple of weeks where you can really say, yes, this child meets all the criteria. It's sort of impossible to make that diagnosis in 10 minutes, and yet that's what they get reimbursed for by the insurance companies.
We're talking right now to Ryan D'Agostino about his piece in Esquire called The Drugging of the American Boy, looking at ADHD, prescription drugs, and concerns that maybe too many boys are being medicated.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation now about ADHD and concerns our guest has that the condition may be overdiagnosed and overtreated, especially for boys. Ryan D'Agostino is with us. His recent piece in Esquire is called The Drugging of the American Boy.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Are we too quick on the draw when it comes to labeling kids with ADHD? Have you or maybe your child been diagnosed? Did you try medication? Did it make things better or worse? 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll go right to the phones now. Let's take a call from Darren in Hayward. Hi, Darren.
Hello.
What do you think?
It's something that you do hear more and more. Like the statistics are going up. My son was diagnosed with it. And his grades did improve, but he did lose a lot of weight. His sleep patterns were very, disrupted, and it's just something that is concerning. He swears by it, but should he, continue taking it?
So your son your son has said, yeah, this is working for me.
Mm-hmm. But the side effects were the weight loss and the sleep patterns.
All right. Well, thank you, Darren. Thank you for calling and sharing your family's experience with this. Ryan, what comes to mind when you hear that?
Well, those are very common side effects to these drugs that are, freely acknowledged by the companies who make them. And they might not sound so bad for you and me, if we were taking some sort of medication for something. But I think when it comes to a child and when you see your boy and he's losing weight and he can't sleep, it's an entirely different scenario. So I sort of hear that frustration, and he's saying, should he keep taking it? I mean, I can't give medical advice, but I can say that I think that every family should think about whether or not they have been, if a diagnosis has been made, that they feel confident in it. And that's a big if these days. I mean, I had the president of the American Psychological Association tell me, well, you have to, parents have to make sure they have a good doctor. Caveat emptor, not every doctor is a hero. And I thought, oh my God, it's up to the parents to make sure the doctors are doing their job. But if you have a diagnosis that you're confident in from a good doctor, then you have to say, well, do we feel like we've been presented with all the treatment options? And there's varying opinions about what are they. Is medication the first thing you should do, or is behavioral therapy the first thing you should do?
Yeah, what do the stats say about behavioral therapy? That was interesting.
Yeah, so the there was a giant landmark study of ADHD in 1999 that everyone, that was sort of the biggest of its kind, and it's been used ever since, the multimodal treatment of ADHD. And it was, the question was, what do you do? Drugs, behavioral therapy, or both? And the conclusion was that the best thing is a combination of drugs and behavioral therapy, but that's pretty much no better than using drugs alone. And so the problem with that finding has been that ever since then, everyone from drug companies to advocacy groups to even doctors has said, well, look, this study says that drugs alone, you don't need to do behavioral therapy because that doesn't work any better than just using drugs. And the thing is that in recent years, there has been wide debate and doubt about that study. A lot of the doctors who participated in it are concerned that it's been misinterpreted and oversimplified. And new studies are actually showing that behavioral therapy by itself, and then if need be, combined with a low dose of medication, is actually far better. And the specialist I focus on in the article in Esquire is Howard Glasser, who's developed this approach called the Nurtured Heart, which I have, in sort of looking at what was out there, I found it to be very thorough. It was an unusual take on an old tradition of positive reinforcement. It's sort of a better version of that, but you have to find what's right for you. But I think that, yeah, that the willingness to try behavioral therapy should be really at the top of the list.
All right. Thanks a lot, Darren. And we go next to Tim. Tim joins us from Appleton. Hi, Tim.
Hi, good afternoon. First of all, thank you very much for the discussion. I have two questions and then just a quick comment. The first one I wanted to ask is, as far as the effects of ADHD in boys, is it something where they will have the same consistent, I don't know what you would call it, characteristic traits or, you know, the trouble of focus? Is that something that just stays consistent all the time, or can it go in and out? So, for example, you know, if a child is doing well in school and is able to focus and testing well and reading well, you know, in that 5 to 7 year old age, can ADHD be something that comes and goes? The second question quickly was, what would be the first steps you would do if, like, a teacher said they had some concerns or they just wanted to mention it? You know, obviously they're not going to make a diagnosis, but they mentioned to you. And then finally, just a quick comment. You know, I want to know, I'm curious to know if it relates at all to how much activity and some of the more creative curriculum in classes and schools have gone down, especially in our school.
All right,
district.
Gotcha, Tim. We'll see if we can get our guest to answer those quickly. We've got lots of other folks waiting to talk too. But Ryan, could you quickly go through those?
Yeah, quickly. I think the question, does it come and go? I think that's what makes it so hard. As with any psychiatric disorder, there is a lot of subjectivity involved in the diagnosis. So that's why you need an extended observation and not a doctor looking at the child for 10 minutes. And if that's a rough 10 minutes and if the kid is bouncing off the walls, well, you know, that's no way to make a diagnosis. So I think you need to really get with a good pediatrician or child psychiatrist who can answer that question. The second part, what if a teacher...
Yeah, what's the first thing to do if a teacher mentions maybe there's a concern there?
Take it seriously and go to your doctor. I mean, teachers can't make diagnoses, but they see the kid, you know, all day in many different scenarios. So take it seriously and go see a doctor that you trust.
And then finally, physical activity. Does it make a difference?
Oh, big time. You have these schools where, you know, whether it's budget cuts or whatever, usually that's what it is. There's no gym. There's no recess. Art classes are diminished. I mean, that's not how kids are made, boys or girls, especially boys. They're not made to sort of sit behind a desk, you know, for 5 to 6 hours a day, you know, quietly listening to the teacher talk and flipping the pages in a book. I mean, I've heard some schools starting the day with recess, which I think is genius.
Ryan, we've got about a minute left, but could you speak a bit before we go about what we know about drugs on developing minds, young children? What do we know about that so far?
Well, we know that the mind does continue to develop longer than I think the fields of psychiatry and psychology have thought for a long time, that the mind is developing deep into the 20s. So that this notion that this is only really an issue for when kids are 4 and 5 and 6 years old, but by the time they're 15, you know, they can handle it. So that's a notion that's being disabused. But the problem is that the answer to that question is really unknown, because there just hasn't been... Ritalin's been around since the 50s, but the studies have just haven't been done because there haven't been the numbers of kids, and for a long time no one did sort of study why it was or what the effects were over time. So,
and we're going to have to leave it there. Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. Obviously a lot to talk about there, and you can read his entire piece on the Central Time Facebook page, Ryan D'Agostino, the author of The Drugging of the American Boy.
Coming up, it's Food Friday, a plea for more attention to the humble lunch. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.